Please stand by. Good morning, and welcome to the PennantPark Floating Rate Capital's third fiscal quarter 2018 earnings conference call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, all participants have been placed in a listen-only mode. The call will be open for a question-and-answer session following the speaker's remarks. If you would like to ask a question at that time, simply press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And if you'd like to withdraw your question, press star 2 on your telephone keypad. It is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Mr. Art Penn, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of PennantPark Floating Rate Capital. Mr. Penn, you may begin your conference.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to PennantPark Floating Rate Capital's third fiscal quarter 2018 earnings conference call. I'm joined today by Aviv Efrat, our Chief Financial Officer. Aviv, please start off by disclosing some general conference call information and include a discussion about forward-looking statements.
Thank you, Art. I'd like to remind everyone that today's call is being recorded. Please note that this call is a property of PennantPark Floating Rate Capital and that any unauthorized broadcast of this call in any form is strictly prohibited. Audio replay of the call will be available by using the telephone numbers and PIN provided in our earnings press release as well as on our website. I'd also like to call your attention to the customer safe harbor disclosure in our press release regarding forward-looking information. Today's conference call may also include forward-looking statements and projections, and we ask that you refer to our most recent filings with the SEC for important factors that could cause actual results to differ materially from these projections. We do not undertake to update our forward-looking statements unless required by law. To obtain copies of our latest SEC filings, please visit our website at www.pennantpark.com or call us at 212-905-1000. At this time, I'd like to turn the call back to our Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, Art Penn.
Thanks, Aviv. I'm going to spend a few minutes discussing financial highlights, followed by a discussion of the portfolio, investment activity, the financials, and then we'll open it up for Q&A. For the quarter ended June 30th, we invested $165 million in primarily first lien senior secured assets at an average yield of 8.2%. The average yield of new investments has increased during 2018 and has benefited from recent increases in LIBOR. PennantPark Senior Secured Loan Fund, or PSSL, continued to grow. As of June 30th, PSSL owned a $347 million diversified pool of 38 names with an average yield of 7.7%. Again, the average yield in PSSL has also benefited from LIBOR increases. Over the last several years, we have substantially grown our platform by adding senior and mid-level investment professionals and regional offices as well as New York. The additional people and offices combined with additional equity and debt capital we have raised has significantly enhanced our deal flow. This puts us in a position to be both active and selective. The growth is evidence of this enhanced platform. Net investment income was 31 cents per share. Core net investment income, which excludes accrued not payable incentive fee, was 28 cents per share. Due to the activity level we are seeing, the increase in LIBOR, and the growth of PSSL, we are pleased that our current run rate recurring net investment income covers our dividend. Our earnings stream should have a nice tailwind based on a continuation of these factors. As of September 30th, our spillover was 45 cents per share. With regard to the Small Business Credit Availability Act, a reminder that our board approved the modified asset coverage that was included in the law, reducing asset coverage from 200% to 150% effective April 5th, 2019. The company has generated an excellent track record over the last 7 years, investing in lower risk, first lien, senior secured floating rate assets. We believe that such assets represent an appropriate risk profile that can be prudently leveraged under the revised statute to provide attractive returns for our investors. Our successful operation of PSSL, which is today operating at the reduced asset coverage level contemplated by the new law, is evidence of this strategy. We continue to work closely with our lenders, bondholders, rating agencies, and stockholders to discuss our roadmap into the future. We are pleased with the positive feedback we have received from various stakeholders. Our primary business of financing middle market financial sponsors has remained robust. We have relationships with about 400 private equity sponsors across the country and elsewhere that we manage from our offices in New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Houston, and London. We have done business with about 180 sponsors to date, and due to the wide funnel of deal flow that we receive relative to the size of our vehicles, we can be extremely selective about what we ultimately invest in. We're only investing in about 2% of the deals that we are shown. We remain primarily focused on long-term value and making investments that will perform well over several years and can withstand different business cycles. Our focus continues to be on companies and structures that are more defensive, have low leverage, strong covenants, and high returns. We are a first call for middle market financial sponsors, management teams, and intermediaries who want consistent, credible capital. As an independent provider, free of conflicts or affiliations, we've become a trusted financing partner for our clients. We are pleased that we've been approaching this investing market with substantially more capital and resources in order to drive significantly enhanced self-originated deal flow. This enhanced deal flow has meant that we can get more looks and be even more relevant to our borrower clients. Being more relevant means that we can be increasingly selective about which investments we make, as well as giving us the ability to be an important leader in transactions who can drive terms. As a result of our focus on high-quality companies, seniority in the capital structure, floating rate assets, and continuing diversification, our portfolio is constructed to withstand market and economic volatility. The cash interest coverage ratio, the amount by which EBITDA or cash flow exceeds cash interest expense, continued to be a healthy 2.7 times. This provides significant cushion to support stable investment income. Additionally, at cost, the ratio of debt to EBITDA in the overall portfolio was 4.4 times, another indication of prudent risk. In our core market of companies with $15 million to $40 million of EBITDA, our capital is generally important to the borrowers and sponsors. We are still seeing attractive risk-reward, and we're receiving covenants, which help protect our capital. Our credit quality since inception over 7 years ago has been excellent. Out of 325 companies in which we have invested since inception, we have experienced only 5 non-accruals. On those 5 non-accruals, we've recovered 98 cents on the dollar so far. As of June 30th, we had no non-accruals on our books. With regard to the economy and credit cycle, at this point, our underlying portfolio indicates a strong U.S. economy and no sign of a recession. Given our long-term track record, we believe that we are well-positioned to weather different economic scenarios. From an experience standpoint, we are one of a few middle-market direct lenders who was in business prior to the global financial crisis and have a strong underwriting track record during that time. Although PFLT was not in existence back then, PennantPark as an organization was and was focused primarily on investing in subordinated and mezzanine debt. Prior to the onset of the global financial crisis in September 2008, we initiated investments which ultimately aggregated $480 million, again primarily in subordinated debt. During the recession, the weighted average EBITDA of those underlying portfolio companies climbed by 7.2% at the trough of the recession. This compares to the average EBITDA decline of the Bloomberg North American High Yield Index of 42%. As a result, the IRR on those underlying investments was 8%, even though they were done prior to the financial crisis and recession. We are proud of this downside case track record on primarily subordinated debt. In terms of new investments, we had another active quarter investing in attractive risk-adjusted returns. Our activity was driven by a mixture of M&A deals, growth financings, and refinancings. In virtually all these investments, we've known these particular companies for a while, have studied the industries, or have a strong relationship with the sponsor. Let's walk through some of the highlights. We invested $18.7 million in the first lien debt of Beauty Industry Group. Beauty Industry Group provides hair extension and cosmetic products. Gage Capital is the sponsor. Impact Group provides outsourced sales, marketing, and merchandising services to consumer packaged goods companies. We purchased $20 million of a first lien term loan. CI Capital is the sponsor. Turning to the outlook, we believe that the remainder of 2018 will be active due to both growth and M&A-driven financings. Due to our strong sourcing network and client relationships, we are seeing active deal flow. Let me now turn the call over to Aviv, our CFO, to take us through the financial results.
Thank you, Art. For the quarter ended June 30th, 2018, net investment income was 31 cents per share. Core net investment income was 28 cents per share, excluding 3 cents per share of accrued but not payable incentive fee. Looking at some of the expense categories, management fees totaled $3.5 million. General and administrative expenses totaled about $1.1 million, and interest expense totaled about $3.9 million. During the quarter ended June 30th, net unrealized depreciation on investments was about $3.2 million or 8 cents per share. Net realized losses was about $2 million or 5 cents per share. Net unrealized appreciation on credit facility and notes was $2 million or 5 cents per share, and income in excess of dividend was about $1 million or 2 cents per share. Consequently, NAV went from $13.98 per share to $13.82 per share. Our entire portfolio, our credit facility and notes, are marked to market by our board of directors each quarter using the exit price provided by an independent valuation firm, exchanges, or independent broker-dealer quotes when active markets are available under ASC 820 and 825. In cases where broker-dealer quotes are inactive, we use independent valuation firms to value the investments. Our portfolio is highly diversified with 83 companies across 22 different industries. 90% is invested in first lien senior secured debt, 4% in second lien debt, 6% in subordinated debt and equity, including 4% in PSSL. Our overall debt portfolio has a weighted average yield of 8.7%. 100% of the portfolio is floating rate. Now, let me turn the call back to Art.
Thanks, Aviv. To conclude, we want to reiterate our mission. Our goal is a steady, stable, and protected dividend stream coupled with the preservation of capital. Everything we do is aligned to that goal. We try to find less risky middle market companies that have high free cash flow conversion. We capture that free cash flow primarily in first lien, senior secured floating rate debt instruments, and we pay out those contractual cash flows in the form of dividends to our shareholders. In closing, I'd like to thank our extremely talented team of professionals for their commitment and dedication. Thank you all for your time today and for your investment and confidence in us. That concludes our remarks. At this time, I would like to open up the call to questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. And if you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. And we will take our first question today from Ryan Lynch with KBW. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Excuse me. You mentioned in your prepared comments that you guys have added, people to the platform that has, kind of enhanced the deal flow. Can you maybe just highlight some of the recent hires you guys have made across the PennantPark platform and exactly what they're really bringing to the platform and the deal flow side?
I'm sorry, Ryan. I've been on mute. We've made investments in the U.S. and outside the U.S. in senior people. We've added an office in Los Angeles, an office in Chicago. One of our partners moved to Houston. We've added an office in London, and we've beefed up both senior and our mid-level team here in New York. That has resulted in more looks, more relationships, new relationships coming into the firm. We decided as we were beefing up our overall business and our first lien business in particular that we would that it needed to be a bit more feet on the street in order to get the looks and the relationships that we were hoping to get. So those investments, which have been over the last few years, have really started to pay off with new relationships and more looks and more deals than we've ever had.
Okay, that's helpful. I thought I stumped you there for a second.
Yeah, we had some technical difficulties. My apologies.
No, that's fine. And then moving to the some of the unrealized losses this quarter, were those driven by company? Like, I guess what really drove the depreciation or unrealized loss? I saw LifeCare had a little bit of markdown. Were there any other specific companies that drove the bulk of those write downs?
Look, it was about, I think it was about 15 cents in total NAV diminution. You know, two-thirds of it were things that are, you know, number one, our bonds traded up. So, as you know, our accounting, basically, when our bonds trade up, that hurts our NAV. That's because we try to match assets and liabilities and how we mark to market. So that was about a third of our NAV diminution. Another third of our NAV diminution was because we exited Sunshine Oil Sands, which was our one energy deal that we had. It was our one non-accrual that we had. And we just decided to exit and not have any energy name, so we exited that. So between the bonds being marked up, us exiting our one non-accrual and our one energy name, that's two-thirds of the NAV effect that we had. And then, you know, we have like one healthcare name, LifeCare, that continues to, it's a small investment that continues to be troubled. But, you know, we feel very good about the portfolio. The companies by and large are performing well, and as we said in our remarks, we see no signs of recession, so we feel really good about the book.
Okay, that's helpful. And then you may have said this in the past, but I don't have it down anywhere. Have you guys provided any sort of with the passage of the increased leverage limitation? Have you guys provided any sort of target leverage range you guys intend to run at once that goes into full effect?
We have not provided a range yet. Where, as we said in our prepared remarks, we're speaking to, you know, all of our stakeholders and getting feedback, you know, rating agencies, et cetera. Look, I mean, if you look at PSSL as an example, you know, that is leveraged more than 1-to-1, and we believe we have among the lowest risk book of any BDC. If you look at the deals we're doing, primarily first lien, if you look at the yields that we're generating, which are among the lower end of the BDC space, which indicate among the lower risk of the BDC space, we feel, you know, comfortable that we can operate comfortably with cushion, you know, above the 1-to-1. But, you know, we over the coming months we'll be ascertaining, you know, and deciding, and again speaking to our stakeholders, and we'll be coming out with a view, you know, as we talk to all these stakeholders. But in the coming quarter or two, we'll give a precise or a more precise range of where we feel comfortable operating.
Okay. And then as we kind of trend up to that date in April of 2019, do you guys intend to kind of maybe continue to ramp up leverage and maybe ramp up leverage higher than where you've historically run at, knowing that eventually the ceiling is going to get raised in April of 2019?
Yeah, so look, we've always said historically, even before the change in law, that given the assets that PFLT focuses on, 0.8 to 0.9 times was, you know, not a problem, given that, you know, the world seems to think these assets can be leveraged safely much more than that. So certainly, you know, higher leverage than where we are now. And as we talk to, you know, our stakeholders over time, we'll ascertain a more, you know, a more, we'll give you more formal guidance. But, you know, we've always said 0.8, 0.9. These types of assets, as we've said in the joint venture, can get leveraged up to 2-to-1, and middle market CLOs get leveraged up to 5-to-1. So, you know, we certainly would always want to create cushion from wherever the law is, but we feel really good about this book and the type of assets that we're generating and their ability to put more leverage on them.
Okay, and then just one more. I know you mentioned on the last call, we were talking about covenants on the debt that you guys have in your liability structure. I know you said there's a covenant in there with your bonds. If you get a two-notch downgrade, the you get about 20 basis point increase, but they've already reaffirmed that. Are there any covenants in your current credit facility today that would prevent you from going above 1-to-1 that would have to be amended?
Yeah, no. On the credit facility, we're talking to our lenders, and we will, and you've seen the whole BDC space get redone credit facilities. We're we're in process of speaking to our lenders, and as we roll out, once we've spoken to our lenders and all the constituencies, we'll roll out a revised guidance. But we would anticipate amending our credit facility.
Okay. Those are all my questions. Thank you for the time today.
Thanks, Ryan.
And we'll take the next question from Raz Doom with Leader Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys. What do you think about the economic environment in general, and are there any specific sector that seems more attractive to you in the near future?
Thanks, Roz, and we appreciate you being on, and we certainly appreciate the shareholder interest that we have in Israel and elsewhere. So thank you for your interest. The economic environment in the U.S. Remains strong. We would characterize it as a moderately growing economy. We see EBITDAs of our underlying portfolio growing, generally around 5 to 7% a year. We see no signs of a recession at this point. We always underwrite as if there's going to be a recession, and when we make investments, we assume there's a recession in the model, and we make sure that we feel very comfortable about credits through a recession, and we talked about how we did during the last recession. But the economic environment is strong. What that means in terms of industries, we're always focused on industries that are more recession-resistant, that generate high free cash flow, or that free cash flow can be used to pay down debt and to pay off debt. So, the industries we're focused on right now are business services, distribution, healthcare services, software, industries where we see very high free cash flow conversion.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Russ.
And we'll now take a question from Mickey Schleen with Ladenburg. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Excuse me. Art, because it's been so competitive out there, some BDCs are certainly having a tough time navigating the sponsored cash flow market. But looking at PFLT, the portfolio has about doubled over the last couple of years. And in that time, as you mentioned, the yield's gone up sort of in line with LIBOR, which implies you're maintaining your spreads. You mentioned the recent hires you've made over the last several quarters. I think it would be really helpful for us if you could, give some insight as to how the origination team is structured, how it attacks the market in order to help you accomplish these very good trends that we've seen the last couple of years.
So it's a good question, Mickey, and I think the real answer is our brand and our awareness in the market right now is greater than our capital. We're kind of a moderately sized firm. We're not one of these firms that manages $20 billion or anything. So, when you manage the type of capital that we have and you put our brand to the market, which we think is very strong, and then you put very senior, talented investment professionals against that in market, in region, we've been able to generate, ample flow for our moderately sized vehicles. So that's what's going on. When we hire, people into the platform, again, it's a different model. We ask our investment professionals to do deals from end zone to end zone. They're supposed to be helping originate it, diligence, underwrite it, bring it through investment committee, negotiate covenants, and then monitor it once it's in portfolio. So we ask them to do end zone. And importantly in that is, their job is not to originate. They don't get paid a commission to bring a deal in. Their job really is to be the line of first defense to protect our capital and to protect shareholders' capital and make good investments. So, when we hired our managing director on the West Coast, we said, Your title is not head of West Coast origination. Your title is head of West Coast investment. You're the line of first defense. So that's emboldened him to not only originate, but also he and the team that we assign to these deals has to own the credit risk and has to make sure they underwrite appropriately. I think what's really helped us underwrite why we've had such a good senior debt track record is because, as you know, we started out 11 years ago as a mezzanine or subordinated debt shop. And we underwrite senior debt the same way that we underwrite subordinated debt. And we've had a very nice track record underwriting subordinated debt. So by definition, when we underwrite senior debt, which is usually less risky, we're using the same underwriting discipline. So why we've had 98% recoveries and all of that, I think in part and parcel is because of how we underwrite and how we structure.
That's really helpful and insightful. I appreciate it. And if I could just follow up in terms of gauging changes in risk tolerance over those last couple of years, can you talk about, you know, the trends over those last 2 years in terms of the share of sponsored deals in the portfolio and trends in borrower EBITDA and leverage multiples? What I'm getting at is, you know, these have been good, solid results. You know, is there embedded in there some additional risk that we should be aware of?
Look, it's a good question. I think the percentage of, as the market has matured, and look, we've been wrong. We were calling the peak of the credit cycle 4 years ago, right? So we were perhaps overly cautious. But over those last 3-4 years, we've generally moved up capital structure across our platform. The percentage of sponsor deals has grown. We're now doing 90-95% sponsor related versus what I'd say 80% at one point. Why do we like the sponsor related? We like having big equity cushions beneath us. And it, for us, it's been okay. We've said, look, we're happy to have a safer book, and we're also okay taking a little bit less risk and a little bit less reward if the book is safer. So a higher percentage of our deals are sponsor, a higher percentage of our deals are senior secured. And yes, leverage levels have crept up. I'd say for PFLT, we're now at 4.4 times debt to EBITDA. That's crept up from about 4 times over the last, you know, kind of year or two. So we're very aware of that. We want to keep it in the low fours generally, but we like being at the top of the capital structure. We like having the floating rate. We like having a big, big equity check, in certain cases, second lien or subordinated check beneath us. And what has happened, even though our leverage has crept up a little bit, the cushion of capital beneath us, whether it be second lien or subordinated debt or equity, has grown over the last few years.
And has borrower EBITDA, you know, remained relatively, in terms of the target size of EBITDA of the borrowers that you're looking at, has that changed meaningfully over the last couple of years?
Yeah, we've always been in the $15 to $40 million EBITDA zone because once you get above 40 of EBITDA, these borrowers can access the broadly syndicated market very efficiently. So, you know, our average, if you looked at our book, it's probably an average of $30 million of EBITDA. Some are closer to the low end of our range, and some are, you know, obviously at the high end of our range. But it's kind of generally remained stable.
All right, and one last question, if I may. When the higher leverage kicks in next year, have you thought about or are you contemplating bringing the senior loan fund onto the balance sheet? You know, the reason I ask is that it would increase, in a sense, transparency from the perspective of investors. It would also make your non-qualified asset bucket larger, which could give you some opportunities down the road. I understand you want to take care of your partners, and perhaps there's a way to do that, but I'd certainly be interested in understanding how you're thinking about that.
Yeah, so the way the law came down, I mean, we already had upsized our credit facility for PSSL and upsized, you know, our commitment and Kemper's commitment right before the law changed. The law change was obviously a surprise to us. We've had great success with PSSL. We're kind of in the middle of, you know, we invested over $300 million in it. It's a $600+ million structure. So we think over the next 9 to 12 months we can get PSSL fully levered. You know, Kemper's been a terrific partner for us. We see, you know, there's a very, you know, good Sabago relationship. We see credit very similarly. So our intention is to grow PSSL and get it fully invested over the next 9-12 months. You know, in 9 months, it's about April of 19. So, you know, we'll take a look at everything. But we certainly really like our relationship with Kemper and would like to continue it in a lot of different ways. And, you know, so we'll figure it out as we go. In terms of transparency, I mean, the SEC requires, and it's in the queue, I think everything's in there, all the investments, the just like we would do in a statement of investments in a regular 10-Q, it's all there in our queue. If you, you know, would like to go through it with us or V later, we're happy to go through it. But name by name, industry, cost, fair market value, yields, it's all disclosed in our queues.
You know, I'm aware it's in the queue. It's you know, I guess, and the word transparency is maybe not the best use of terms. I was just referring to the fact that the SLF is a separate entity apart from the BDC. But I understand your answer, and I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thanks, Mickey.
And as a reminder, if you do have a question, it is *1 on your touchtone phone. And we will now take a follow-up question from Ryan Lynch with KBW. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I just had one follow-up. I noticed that this quarter you got in PSSL, there's about $27 million of investments purchased from PFLT. Can you provide a little background on that? Were those loans that were just recently originated by PFLT that were just kind of dropped down there, or were those older loans that have been on PFLT's book for several quarters that were sold down into PSSL? And can you just give a little background and I guess thought process of how you guys are thinking about moving investments into PSSL, why that occurs?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, some deals go right into PSSL. Some deals need to be seasoned by PFLT due to rules and regulations around self-originated deals. So in certain cases, PFLT has to buy it and hold it for a while and season it, and then it can go into PSSL. Some are just deals we've had that have grown, and PSSL, i.e. Kemper, really like them and want them to go into PSSL. So it's a combination of three ways that deals find their way into PSSL. One is upfront. Two is it needs to be seasoned for a while in PFLT. And three is we've grown the position in PFLT and PSSL wants it, and it's very efficient for us to move it over to PSSL. And that's all done at fair market value. Wherever the valuation firms come up with the value, it's all based on that.
So it's fair to assume then, going forward, we could expect, you know, most likely some level of sales from PFLT's balance sheet into PSSL going forward.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
Look, we really like PSSL. We like the relationship with Kemper, and we like the efficiency of capital. And we think we got another 9-12 months to kind of get, you know, fully deployed, and that'll be very accretive to shareholders. And we'll pick our head up, and we'll see where we go. But it's we're very pleased with the financing from Capital One, so. You know, when it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Okay. That's all for me. Thanks, guys.
And that concludes our question and answer session. I'd like to turn it back to Art Penn for any additional or closing remarks.
Just want to thank everybody for being on the call today. Thank you for your interest. We'll be talking to you kind of in mid-November, which is when our next quarterly call happens. A reminder, it is our 10-K, so the call happens and our K filing happens a little bit later than our normal Q filing would happen in November. So look forward to speaking to everybody, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much.
And thank you very much. That does conclude our conference for today. I'd like to thank everyone for your participation, and you may now disconnect.